why the Libertarian Party is because it holds my values.
This is Speaking of Liberty, bringing you the perspectives of people driving the liberty movement forward. Your first source of freedom and politics in the Tar Heel State, here's your host, Sarah Brady Wagner.
Speaking of Liberty, Episode 1, How to Run for Office. Today on the podcast, you'll hear me talking about how to run for office as a Libertarian in North Carolina in 2018. You'll also hear an interview with Libertarian candidate Eric Roudsepp for Durham House 31. I hope you enjoy. Today, I just want to talk to you guys as the political director for the Libertarian Party of North Carolina. And I just want to make a great pitch for why you should run for North Carolina General Assembly as a Libertarian in 2018. So this is definitely targeted right at my audience in North Carolina that is a registered Libertarian. On February 12th, the filing period opens up so that anyone who wants to run for office in North Carolina can do so. Whether or not you face a primary is completely dependent on whether or not anyone else decides to run as a Libertarian in your district. But why should you run in the first place? Why does this matter? The first thing that you consider is just a matter of choice. In 2016, 53 General Assembly offices went unopposed in the general election. That means that as soon as the filing period ended, which in 2016 was in December, they already knew that they had won another term in office. They didn't have to bother with fundraising. They didn't have to even go back to their constituencies and talk to their voters and consider whether or not they were the best fit for them, because nobody else even stepped up to offer. In 2012, that number was 56. This gives voters no choice, no reason to vote, and no incentive to engage with the democratic process at all. A lot of this is due to hugely lopsided districts caused by the gerrymandering that North Carolina has gotten so wonderfully good at over the years. At this point, aided by computers in ways that can cut up districts so that nobody would even consider running, because all it is made up of voters who are just going to vote along the party line. In districts without choice, voter turnout is even lower because the result's the same no matter what. You can come and vote for the one person on your ballot, or you can not come, and that person's still going to win. You don't get an option of none of the above. These districts are screaming for a Libertarian candidate to step in and to be the alternative to what everyone assumes will happen. The difference in fundraising that candidates have to put out, even as incumbents, during re-election is hugely different depending on whether or not they're facing any sort of challenger. Just being another name on the ballot means that people who don't like the incumbent, who think that they've done anything subpar, you're the only other option. That's their only way that they can find to voice their opposition. Even more can be done with candidates who want to pose an active challenge, who want to go in and actively speak the message that they're putting forward. Because it's a message that a lot of people can agree with. It's the message of personal responsibility, of making people have power in their own lives and not taking their things and giving that power to other people. So how would you do this? Maybe I've piqued your interest and you say, all right, well, I have someone who's running unopposed, or better yet, I have someone who's running in a close district, and I think I could make another option in this binary choice given by the two major parties. So how do I do this? Well, I'm going to give you your easy 6-step process of getting your name on the ballot as a Libertarian in North Carolina in 2018 to run as a member of the General Assembly. So step number 1 is to find a treasurer. Now, you've got a couple of options for your treasurer, but this is necessary to be able to fulfill all of the filing requirements that the Board of Elections gives you. There's a lot of campaign finance rules that go into, you have to account for every penny that you spend on any advertising, even just your filing fees for office. You need to make sure that everything that comes, any donations that come in are accounted for, and anything that is paid out is accounted for as well. That's what your treasurer's for. Luckily, the state board offers an entire training course available for free online to anyone who wants to be a treasurer. So you can enlist the help of someone who is already a certified treasurer. Getting in touch with your local affiliate is a great source for this. If there's not a local affiliate in your area, then getting in touch with the state party, or specifically with me, is a great place to start, and I can try and get you in contact with somebody who has experience working as a campaign treasurer. If you have somebody else who's interested in helping you on your campaign already, you can convince a friend to serve as your treasurer. All you have to do is make sure that they complete that campaign training. And it's not a bad idea for you to go through with it with them too, so that you can be familiar with all of the compliance issues, so that nobody has any accidents or causes any issues with the paperwork. Because that's the easiest way for your challenger to get you out of the way. It's just to point out, hey, you know what? You didn't fulfill this exact requirement at the right time, and you're off the ballot. That's why compliance is such an important issue. That's why you've got your friend who's going to help you to make sure that he's your treasurer, she's your treasurer, and they're going to make sure that you have all of your paperwork in on time and every penny is accounted for. Or if you want to go it on your own, you're, you know, a ruggedly independent libertarian individual, then you can serve as your own treasurer. In this case, you need to complete the training, and this is completely allowable under the Board of Elections rules. But, you know, it's still a good idea to consider having at least one other person on your team to help you with a campaign. It's definitely more doable if you're looking at doing a local campaign, so not necessarily running for a general assembly seat, but if you're running for maybe a county commissioner or a municipal office, then being your own treasurer, completely doable, because you're dealing with much smaller numbers in terms of campaign funds, and oftentimes you can even do something completely self-funded. But once you have somebody who is set up as your treasurer and has gone through the training course and is certified as your treasurer by the State Board of Elections, now you're ready for step two, which is to form a committee. Since bureaucracy is so much fun, this is where you take the hand of your treasurer friend, or you fortify yourself as your own treasurer, and you go to fill out the organizational packet for new candidate committees with your treasurer. So this packet can be found at the State Board of Elections website, and we'll include a link in the show notes, and it will include forms CRO-2100A, CRO-3100, CRO-3500, CRO-3600, and CRO-3900. All of these forms have the specifics that you need in order to file for an employer identification number for tax purposes, and in order to get yourself established as an official political candidate committee with the State Board of Elections. You either mail or deliver in person those forms to the State Board of Elections in Raleigh. So if you're running for a state office, then you need to make sure that you file these forms with the state board, not with your county board. If you are running for a local office, then you may need to file with your county board. But in the case of the General Assembly, which is what we're discussing today, you need to make sure that they get to the State Board of Elections in Raleigh. And we'll include the address for that once again in the show notes. Once you have all of that information in, you can go and open a bank account. This is as simple as going to your local bank and asking to open an interest-free account for a political candidate committee. The reason you're opening an interest-free account is because it simplifies things for your treasurer. Any interest that you earn on an account has to be accounted for as income into your campaign, and the tiny amounts of money that you're going to make from that are not worth the amount of effort that your treasurer is going to have to go through to make sure that they account for and file that every single time that you get a monthly payment. The bank will generally at this point have somebody who knows exactly how to do that. You know, you're not the first political candidate who's come to open a bank account, and they'll walk you right through whatever the process that they have at that branch is. So now you have formed your committee. Now you are ready to go to step three, which is select an office to run for. At this point, you can consider what is up for election this cycle. Every House and Senate seat at the state level in the General Assembly is up for election every 2 years. So you can consider these two and consider if either incumbent is likely to go unopposed. Do they generally go unopposed in the past? Has no one else indicated that they're going to run against them from a major party? Or if somebody has announced that they're running against them, is this election going to be very close? Is this something that you could make a particular splash in and draw attention to an issue of interest by being the Libertarian candidate in this election? Or is there a local office that you have a lot of interest in serving in? A county commissioner office or local municipal elections? Most of those take place in odd years, but there are a lot of county commissioner offices up too. There's even, if you have expertise in particular fields, there's a lot of specialty offices like soil commissioner. You know, if that is something that you have expertise in, then absolutely considering running for office in the public sector is a great way to further libertarian issues in those fields. So once you've decided on an office, step four is raising the filing fee. For any General Assembly seat, the filing fee this year is $207. It's not a terribly high number, so your first thing that you should always look at is self-funding first. But I understand that not everybody has $207 just lying around. Like, it is a relatively low number when it comes to fundraising, but it's not just pocket cash. So if you don't have that money laying around, then the first place you should go after that is asking your family and friends. These are the people who know you best, and if you're considering running for public office, they should be the ones who you can go to and say, hey, I want to serve my community, I want to further these particular messages and these particular issues. Would you be willing to donate to my campaign so that I could file to run for office? If you can't get together 10 people who are willing to donate $20 each to your campaign and then scrounge up $7 worth of change, it really might be worth considering whether or not you're the best candidate for office. But if you just don't even know how to approach people, the idea of asking your family and friends just terrifies you, then please reach out to your local affiliate or the state party for more guidance on fundraising. I can introduce you to people who have, you know, expressed an interest in, please get me in contact with Liberty candidates that I can support. These are the easiest people to practice asking for fundraising on. These are people who have already offered, yes, I want to fundraising, please ask me. But those are the kinds of things that you need to get in contact with local affiliates or with the state party so that we can bring together all of these different resources. So once you've got your $207 filing fee together, step five is to actually file for office. So filing for office is open between February 12th and 28th this year. And the first step would be to call your county or state board of elections and tell them that you would like to file for office. You may need to make an appointment if you want, particularly if you're trying to go to a county office, but this is because you will need to sign an affidavit in front of the chairman of your board of elections to attest to the fact that you are offering yourself to run for public office. If you need to make an appointment, be genial, be kind, make an appointment. Always respect other people's time, and then make sure that you have time to go in between February 12th and February 28th to file for office. Go in person to your county or state board of elections office and file a notice of candidacy with your county or state board of elections office. At this point, you'll sign the affidavit because you're running for public office. Once you've completed that, then step number six is the best, because step number six is when you get together with your local affiliate and your treasurer and your campaign team and you have your after filing party to decompress from all of the bureaucracy that goes into making sure that you are officially on the ballot in North Carolina as a Libertarian. Today we have Eric Roudsep with us, running as a Libertarian for NC House 31. Eric?
Hey, how's everyone doing? Yes, my name is Eric Roudsep, and I'm running for District 31 right here in Durham, North Carolina.
Well, we're glad to have you here with us.
Well, it is my pleasure to be with you today.
So I just wanted to take an opportunity to talk to you about what caused you to decide to run for office.
Well, actually, that's a very complex answer right there, because it really breaks down into three different parts. The first is it's been a lifelong dream of mine. I can go back to high school and I was telling people that I was going to eventually run for office. So it's been something that's been on the back of my mind. But of course, becoming involved in politics, I kind of became more involved in the back of house aspects of politics. And that entire front running aspect really kind of fell from the limelight in my personal aspects of life. there are a lot of other libertarians and political contacts that I've made throughout my political career. One very influential person, or actually two people I'd like to call out. One is Barbara Howe and the other one is Larry Sharp up in New York. And both of them had expressed that I would make a great candidate, especially for the Libertarian Party. So that started getting everything kind of boiling back up to the surface. The kind of straw that broke the camel's back is that I am active in my community, and I do see a lot of the different things going on in our communities, especially underprivileged communities. And I was talking with them and found that the politicians are really failing them today. They're screaming for an opportunity, but they're getting handouts. And they feel like they're trapped in this endless cycle. Well, I feel that the Libertarian Party, and I know a lot of other libertarians out there, feel that we can be that solution where we want to bring opportunity for people to succeed and create an equal race where everyone starts off equally, but it's your own determination, your own values, your own work ethic, your own ability that sees where you finish. And a lot of these people in these underprivileged communities, that's exactly what they're asking for. And I felt that once talking to them, it became a personal mission and my ability to actually bring them those opportunities. So that was all three of those things coming together really cemented and forged my candidacy for District 31 right here.
Well, that's a really good reasons. As far as your decision to run as a libertarian, why libertarian? Why not run as an unaffiliated or run with one of the two major parties?
So when I was younger and I started off in the Republican Party, my family has always been Republicans. We've always had very conservative economic values. And even my early campaign and political days, I was working for the Republican Party. Well, as the Republican Party evolved, they became more conservative socially and fiscally. And once the social conservatism, especially the religious aspects of the social conservatism, came in, I felt that I didn't leave the Republican Party, but the Republican Party, in fact, actually left me. So after that, I went over to the Democratic Party. And so I jumped from one side of the political spectrum all the way over to the other. And I've realized very quickly that the Democratic Party is not exactly where I needed to be either. While we saw a lot of similar values and social issues, I felt completely alienated with my own financial or economic ideas and ideals within the Democratic Party. So that's when I became unaffiliated. After a brief time, I did find the Libertarian Party, even up in New York, and then I moved down here, and that's where I really became a libertarian and a very active libertarian. So to answer your question of why the Libertarian Party is because it holds my values. We're socially forward-thinking, and we're fiscally responsible. It's kind of the marriage of the best of all worlds, giving people the real opportunity to succeed and to really drive themselves further in life, where you create your own future, you're to the destiny of your own stars. So you also asked, why not as unaffiliated? Well, in the state of North Carolina, you can run as unaffiliated. However, it's a very difficult process. So the way the structure of the state is, well, you'll probably never see a successful unaffiliated candidate just because of the amount of groundwork and the financial resources needed to get those groundwork aspects done so they can get effectively on the ballot.
What about the team that's involved to build up? I know, you know, having a campaign, it's not just a one-person operation. Who are the other kinds of people that you had to go out and find to get involved to help?
Well, actually, doing the social outreach and the volunteering in the community, there's a lot of individuals that automatically come right to the surface to help you with your run. Now, I'm lucky that, you know, my partner is actually my volunteer coordinator. There's somebody in the Libertarian Party who has stepped forward to do my finances. I still do need a real campaign manager, but I do have a scheduler, and I have a whole bunch of other campaign staff that are all volunteer, but they've all been my contacts throughout the community that when they found out that I was running, they were eager to help.
What possibly might cause somebody to take pause and say, maybe I'm not the best candidate, and maybe they would be better considered as a role in helping a campaign.
Well, first of all, you have to remember that in the Libertarian Party, or especially in Wake County, they have three different levels of candidates. So they have their change, they have their challenge, and then they have choice candidates. And most people will be able to fit within one of those different categories, depending on what their time availability is, what their financial availability is, and all of those different aspects. But if there's one thing that would, in my mind, disqualify someone from being a candidate, is if you lack the passion. Because you're never going to have... You're never going to be a millionaire becoming a politician if you're doing it right. So if you don't have the passion to help your community, to drive forward liberty within your community, then you're not doing the public any justice. You don't have that passion. So that would probably be the one thing that I would say would disqualify someone from being a candidate.
So now that you've gotten involved in your community, you've talked to the people, you've lived here for a while, what are some of the issues that you have had come up that people really have been interested in?
Well, not only just talking to the constituency that I would represent, but also looking at openly accessible data from Quinnipiac, the number one issue, not only in Durham, but throughout North Carolina, is education. Education is a cornerstone of what is on voters' minds at the latter half of 2017 and even going into 2018 right now. There's a lot of things going on in education, and the Democrats are looking at spending more money on fixing the problem. Well, they've never gotten any type of result out of that, and we're still towards the bottom of the pack as far as the quality of education in North Carolina. The Republicans are just talking about charter schools, and homeschooling, which is a great option and a wonderful solution. However, it still doesn't fix the problem of education in North Carolina. A lot of individuals are not going to be able to send their children to charter schools, or they don't have the ability to homeschool. So we still have to come up with a viable solution for the majority of the population. And it's not so much spending more money. What it is that we're not spending money smart. What we're doing is we're spending so much money on standardized testing that we're taking away money from potentially paying to get better teachers or to encourage our teachers to become better. We're also spending a lot of money on frivolous staff for our superintendents and everything. I don't know what your school was when you went to elementary school or middle school or even high school, but the main office when I was going to school was a principal, his personal assistant, an office assistant, someone who took attendance, and one additional staff person in the office. If you go to a school today, they've got staffs of 15, 20 people in just the main office. Where did all of these additional people come from? The reason is because North Carolina is putting so many additional requirements on education to track the efficiency of our teachers. Well, North Carolina requires that all of our teachers go through rigorous testing before they become teachers, and they also have to achieve certain levels of education. So if they've already passed all of these benchmarks, why can't we trust our teachers a little bit more than we actually do their job and know that they actually have the children's best interest in their minds? I think that'll all of a sudden go a long way, especially if we can turn around and then take that and start paying our teachers commensurate to what their education level would demand in an open market environment. Lastly, as far as education is concerned, when all of a sudden we start taking away all of these standardized testing, we start taking away all of the ancillary staff that doesn't have any purpose other than to just make the books, we can start paying our teachers commensurate, we can start getting the supplies and the equipment that we need in our schools, and we also have to look at the methodology that we're teaching our children in. Because the methodology is very good for one type of learner. What if we start looking at the very fundamentals of how we teach our children in a 21st century society where we're maybe reducing the overall hours of school, but we're relying on technology for them to continue their education in a home or a secondary environment. So then we can start doing away with facility charges and all of that. So I think we're not utilizing the tools that exist in this modern era to really make the impacts in education that we really need.
So the final issue that I want to talk to you about is term limits.
Yes.
Is this something that you very specifically note on your website?
Mm-hmm.
Are you interested in term limits just for North Carolina representatives, for municipal offices? What does that mean?
So term limits, especially for the NC House and NC Senate, would be vital. The person that I'm potentially running against is a gentleman who's now at the end of 2018, at the end of this term, will have been in the NC House for 40 years. He's affectionately called the principal in the NC legislature. This is, to me, unfathomable, just for the simple fact that new blood brings new ideas. Now, when this gentleman started, he had phenomenal ideas to bring to the table. And he really drove forward a lot of civil rights issues in North Carolina 40 years ago. Unfortunately, the forward motion after 40 years of service has diminished. And that's one of the things that term limits really does encourage. Plus, it also encourages new blood to enter into the political arena, because you're doing away with these long-term incumbents that become almost fortified within the political system of the state. So it actually encourages the youth to enter into the political arena and run for office if there are term limits, because you're encouraging turnover.
Well, Eric, thank you for coming to talk to us today. Once again, this is our guest today is Eric Roudsep, who's running for NC House District 31 in Durham, North Carolina. Thank you for having a chance to sit down with us today.
Thank you for having me today.
This episode's music has been Liberty Is in the Street by The Mirrors, licensed for use under Creative Commons. This podcast has been brought to you by a grant for the Libertarian Party of North Carolina. If you enjoyed Speaking of Liberty, please remember to like and subscribe and recommend us to friends and family next time you find yourself speaking of liberty.